White Rocket Entertainment. White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 263. Hello and welcome to On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast. Brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment with your hosts 002 Jared Albrick, 003 John Ringer, and me, 00 nothing, I got nothing, Van Allen Plexico. This is White Rocket's brand new, very own, well, not brand new, this is our second episode, very own All James Bond All the Time podcast. Welcome back aboard the show, gentlemen. Jared, how are you?
All right, I'm fine. I'm excited to be here. I can't wait to see who's going to come out on top, you know, whether it's living in America or I feel good. It's a man's world. Yeah. Is this a James Brown podcast,
no,
right?
No, it's not the. It's not
as
the,
promised.
It's,
okay.
It's not the James Brown. No.
I loved him in Rocky 4.
Rocky 4. Yes. John's picking up what I'm putting down.
He is. John, how are you tonight? You ready to talk some James Bond?
Absolutely.
I think it's cool. You and I have done so many James Bond episodes already, and then we found a kindred spirit in Jared who likes to talk about it too and is all into it and knows about it. So the three of us together hopefully can put on another good show. I thought the first one went very well. And tonight, this is episode two, not just of our show, but also episode two of our World Cup of James Bond films. Let's just quickly recap what happened previously. In our first episode, we did Group A, and then we did Group C. Now, for those who are new to this, you can go back and find episode 001 about a bit from back at the end of February, early March. And what we did is divided up all 24 current Eon James Bond films. That's like the main ones. With the Broccolis and Salzman's produced. We divided them up into six groups of four, and I seeded them so that highly regarded ones are the number one seeds in the six groups, and fairly lower regarded ones are as you go further down. And we're battling out within the groups to see which movies get the higher scores, which get the lower, and once we've gone through all the groups, the top two move on. Plus some wild cards. We'll get into all the details later if we need to. But when we did Group A last time, the big winner of Group A was You Only Live Twice, followed by On Her Majesty's Secret Service, something of an upset there, and then A View to a Kill, sadly, finished third.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
And it was all very depressing. And Tomorrow Never Dies finished last, which really upset me because that's one of my favorite Bond films. In Group C, GoldenEye actually won the group. Dr. No finished second. And Moonraker made a strong third place showing with Quantum of Solace getting a blank 0-0-0.
I think it got a sad face, if I remember correctly.
In fact, it did, yes. So
I got a zero only because we cannot award negative numbers.
Negative numbers, that's right. And I actually had some good things to say about Quantum of Solace, but still, in the end, it ended up being last in that group. By the way we score the groups is we each get to vote. We each get to rank each movie on a scale of 3 for the best, 2, 1, and then 0 for the worst of the group. And that's how. And then we add up the points that each of the three of us scored. So, for example, one of us gave Dr. No a 3, one gave Dr. No a 2, and one gave Dr. No a 1. So Dr. No got 6 points to finish second in the group. That's how it works. Tonight, we are doing Groups D and Group F. Those are the two groups that are sort of the mirror images at the other end of the of the bracket from the first two. So here, gentlemen, is what we will be looking at tonight. Group D's top-ranked, top-seeded movie is Thunderball. Its next seated movie is Live and Let Die. By the way, what I tried to do, for those of you that don't remember or weren't here last time, is I tried to make it no more than one for each of the Bond actors. That was hard for Roger Moore, but otherwise it's pretty much that each group has like a Connery, a Moore, and then maybe either a Brosnan or Craig or Dalton or some combination. So Thunderball, Live and Let Die. Third is The World Is Not Enough, and the fourth seed is License to Kill. In Group F, we start out with the number one seed in this half of the bracket, Goldfinger, followed by Skyfall, then The Man with the Golden Gun, and finally Octopussy. All right. So let's, without further ado, let's get on into Group D and start talking about these great movies. And I believe that maybe it was you, Jared, that pointed out more than once that they're still Bond movies. And so even if we end up voting them last, they're still James Bond movies, right?
Right.
So they're not that bad.
I still like Quantum of Solace better than a lot of other movies that I've seen. But.
Exactly. Okay. So let's see. Let's kick off. I think we do Group D first. Do you want to just go down the order of the movies as they're seated? That's how we did it last time, I believe. So we'll start out talking about Thunderball. Okay. So, John, why don't you kick us off and tell us your thoughts about Thunderball? And what we've been doing is sort of like the high points and the low points that make you argue for ranking it higher or lower. And then we'll go through and each of us will vote on the points after we've each talked about it.
But so I'm not telling you my score yet. I'm just telling you what I think about it.
Right.
I mean, it's good. It's Sean Connery, you know. But, like, they'd had a couple movies and then they kind of, like, Thunderball, they kind of, you know, went a little crazy. a lot of underwater stuff. You know, that at the time, what was, you know, in 1965 was amazingly cutting edge. But now, at times, it gets a little long watching it. I mean, it's just modern moviegoer perception. But, I mean, it is Bond. It is, you know, Sean Connery at his peak doing Bond, and I like it. But, you know, it's not the best Connery Bond. But I still enjoy it. So.
Okay.
Thoughts?
Jared, your thoughts on Thunderball?
Thunderball is it's a Bond movie, and it does have Connery in it, so John was right on all those counts. yeah, Thunderball's, I agree with John a lot. It kind of gets lumped into the, you know, very classic Bonds, and that's not necessarily wrong, but yeah, I'll just flat out say it. I think it's the most boring Connery one. It's the only James Bond movie that I've ever fallen asleep while I watch it. And
wow.
I fall asleep consistently when I watch it. It's during the underwater scene. Yes, it looks great. The underwater battle scene is it looks good. I think they even won an Academy Award. I think it might be the first Bond that won an Academy Award for the underwater effects. And it's just so long. And it's such a long period of time with no dialogue or anything. It's just music and just underwater, and I just find it very relaxing. And I've nodded off. I'm not making a joke. I've nodded off on it a couple of times. So yeah, the downside is almost sort of like the thing it holds up as its champion case is like, look at this great underwater battle, and I'm like, that's true, but it also puts me to sleep. The upside, the Tom Jones theme song is fun. I believe that was a last-minute replacement song for Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which I actually like better, but I think it's a great song, and it does appear in some versions during the film. You get to see a dog take a leak in that movie, which is always fun. And vulnerable.
Where do you see that? Where do you see that? I'm curious.
It's during the Junkanoo scene. Not, I think it's very shortly after he catches around in the leg.
Oh, okay.
So when see it. There's a dog in the background just completely taking a leak on one of the floats, I think.
That's great.
But anyway, well, that was going to be my next point, though. This film does show Bond as less of a superhero because, if I'm not mistaken, this is the first time he catches a bullet in the series. And so I always thought that was kind of neat that it showed, you know, a little bit more of the humanity. But overall, I think it's a good movie. I like Thunderball, but yeah, it runs a little sleepy time for me near the end.
All right. Well, I think you're both crazy. This is
we established that last episode.
I put the Connerys, before he left the first time, I put the 60s Connerys on a pedestal as just almost untouchable. And Thunderball, for me, has everything I like about all the Connery Bonds and more. It's very nearly my favorite Connery. The only reason I like You Only Live Twice better is because of Blofeld and the volcano and the ninjas and Tiger and Aki and Kissy and all that. I mean, that's just the best. But this is so close. You've got the opening scene where you think he's dead, and then you realize it's, and this is before You Only Live Twice, you think he's dead, and then you realize it's one of his villains that he's chasing. He punches a grieving widow in the face, and it turns out to be the bad guy in drag, which is awesome. He then escapes.
I would have liked it better if it still would have been the widow.
Yeah. He escapes via jetpack, throws it in the trunk, and takes off in the silver Aston Martin, which, unlike in Goldfinger, he doesn't run into a wall, but actually uses to effect an escape using gadgets, which is awesome, which then spray into the camera, which leads us into the credits. It's got an awesome theme song. It's got a cool villain with an eye patch. I mean, how can you go wrong with a cool villain with an eye patch? Who later turns up, by the way, I love that I've seen the other movie that he's in. I can't think of his name, but he's Largo, right? He is also the head of this is so perfect. This is so perfect. I just watched Grand Prix, the James Garner, Jessica Walters. By the way, Jessica Walters back in the 60s. Dang, I didn't even realize it was her. I'm like, oh, that lady. I'm like, that's a nice looking young woman. And then I realized, oh my gosh, it's the old lady from Arrested Development and Archer's mom. It's Archer's mom. But anyway, Largo plays the head of Ferrari in Grand Prix. How awesome is that? Can you not just see him as like the head guy for Ferrari? It's perfect. And the only thing was, I kept thinking, where's his eye patch? How's he getting around down there in the paddock without his eye patch? He's going to run into one of those cars and get run over. But anyway. But yeah, I just love Thunderball. I love everything about it. It's got two of the best Bond women because they're both... You know, the interesting thing about the two Bond women in Thunderball, they are both gorgeous, and one of them's kind of villainy, very villainy, and yet... And the other one's kind of shady because she was with the villain, his mistress. And yet the thing is, neither one of them is like a cartoon character the way that some of the other Bond girls are. They are much more like integral characters to the story, to the point that I don't know who they really are in real life. I don't, you know, it's not like Jane Seymour where I go, oh, look, it's Bond with Jane Seymour, you know, or, oh, look, it's Bond with Ursula Andress. They're just two beautiful women that are part of the story, and I love that. The thing about the underwater, I get that. It does maybe go on a little too long. We'd edit it down in today's world, but it's still cool. It's still really cool. And you get that awesome frame-dropping effect in the fight on the speedboat where they're like, where Largo and Bond are punching each other and then stopping to drive the boat for a second and then punching each other again and then stopping to drive the boat. You know, I just love that. It's hilarious. They never think, slow down, right? They never think, let's just stop for a second and slow down. Instead, they leave the throttle.
Time out, everybody.
Yeah, they just leave the throttle all the way forward and fight and then slow down and then steer and then fight and then steer. And they do that cool thing where they drop frames to make it go even faster. So it's kind of like that works even better to me because the underwater stuff right before it is so slow that you just get this frenetic final act, you know, this final scene where they just are zooming around that hydrofoil. So anyway, I absolutely love Thunderball. I have almost nothing bad to say about it. And I think it's an absolute top three, top four Bond film of all time. All right. Jared, kick us off with... Wait. Oh, I know I've got something here. Oh, come on. Oh, man, I guess I don't have it anymore. John knows what I'm talking about. I had a Live and Let Die. Dang, is it?
But, James, I need you.
So does England.
Well, that's not
Spy
it.
Spy Who Loved Me.
That's not it. Well, anyway, I had this cool thing I've used on the AU Wishbone show where the band's playing and the guy goes, "Whose funeral is it?" "Yaws." I love that noise he makes because
yes,
but anyway.
So you played it on the New Orleans episode. I remember it.
Yeah, that's right. That's correct. So tell us, Jared, tell us about Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die is actually the only Bond movie I've never seen.
No, it's not.
Oh,
you've seen it.
Joe gets a laugh every time.
You've seen it 15 times. Come on.
Live and Let Die, Roger Moore's out of the gate appearance. I tell you, when I was a kid, Live and Let Die was like my favorite. Like,
mm-hmm.
I adored it. Mm-hmm. And I still really like it a lot. As I've grown and matured in my Bond life, I've found other pursuits that I like better. But it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
All right, high points. A cool boat chase.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's your brother-in-law, which was hilarious. David Hedison uttering the most, possibly the most racist line in James Bond history, "Get me a make on a white pimp mobile." Everybody loves that one.
That's great.
Actually, I really like David Hedison, by the way, while I'm making jokes about it. I really like him as Felix Leiter.
Yeah, he's the
classic. The whole voodoo angle was fun.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the more you go back and look at the Bonds, especially as we move into the Roger Moore era, they really start to capture what's, and sometimes this really works for Bond and sometimes it really doesn't, they really kind of capture what's kind of popular in cinema at the time. And then there's a lot of blaxploitation films coming out this time, and so they sort of worked that angle, and they came up with a great product. They really did. I mean, it's running across alligators' backs. It's got my favorite Bond wearable gadget of the Rolex watch. There's a lot to like. Young Jane Seymour is super pretty, and I don't know, there's just a lot to like. Downsides, upon rewatching now, it doesn't age well. It's a very dated film. It definitely says, "Hey, I was made during the blaxploitation craze," you know.
Right,
and
right.
And one hand, that's like, okay, it's very dated. On the other hand, it's kind of charming. So I high marks for Live and Let Die.
John, tell us about Live and Let Die from your perspective.
I love Live and Let Die. When I was a kid, this is the one Bond movie that scared me because of the voodoo stuff. Like,
oh, yes.
The voodoo stuff really freaked me out when I watched this when I was a kid. And so that's my one of the first things I think about. I love the New York stuff. And I love that the bad guy had like a secret. He was basically two bad guys. He had the secret ultra identity. It was Mr. Big. So I love the New York, you know, stuff, the United Nations and the secret identity and stuff. And then I love the island stuff too. I love the voodoo, and I love the, you know, the boat chase and the the sheriff and all that. I mean, that is, you know, some of the most fun action stuff in any Bond movie. You know, and the way the villain dies is kind of meh. But I really like Jane Seymour, and I thought the whole voodoo thing and the guy being on the train at the end, you know, like he wasn't dead, is kind of one of the few times in a Bond movie where they're like, everything doesn't make sense.
You're right. That's right.
So I appreciated that.
Yeah, it's one of the few times that it seems almost supernatural, because up until then, all the supernatural stuff kept getting revealed as tricks that Kananga was using to control people and to scare people. But at the very end, it's like if you got to the end of a Scooby-Doo episode, and as the credits roll, there actually is like a ghost at the farm, you know, or something, instead of a guy in a suit. So that's pretty cool. I'll say this. It is. I agree with you that it's a great leadoff for Roger Moore. I think it's his best Bond. In the general sense, I mean, I'm partial to Moonraker, obviously, just for myself. But I can also be objective and say that overall, I think this is his best. It's got the second best Felix, in my opinion. I still love Jack Lord and Dr. No. But they couldn't bring him back because he was too cool to be on the same movie with Bond. They had to find a more schlubby sidekick, and David Edison was perfect. So the second best Felix. That's what they did. They needed somebody that wasn't going to challenge Bond.
I have a soft spot in my heart for Edison, so I can't call him schlubby. But he's no Jack Lord. I get what you're saying.
Right. It has one of my favorite moments when Roger Moore asked a lady to gift wrap a plastic snake.
Lengthwise,
yes. I love it. He goes into that voodoo shop and is like, could you gift wrap this, please, lengthwise? And then he never goes back for it, does he? I always wonder if there's still, if you go down to New Orleans today and find that voodoo shop, behind the counter is a snake gift wrap sitting there waiting on Bond.
The story of the snake is still out there.
Yeah, it's still there. I love Yaphet Kotto in this movie. He's one of my favorite Bond villains because he plays such a great, he's so over the top, man. He's like, he's as Mr. Big, he's just totally this loudmouth, you know, gangland thug from New York. But when he's Kananga, he's so dignified and controlled, such a great Bond villain in that way. It's also, in my opinion, got the best collect. We talked about this before, John. It's got the best collection of flunkies. I don't know if
he has the best flunkies.
Yeah, I don't know if any one of them is the best overall, like, you know, versus Odd Job or Jaws or whatever. But he has the best group because every one of them has something going on, even if it's lame, like Whisper. Sir, you know, what does he say? Your champagne, sir.
Shall I open it?
Yeah. But he's got the best collection, right? He's got the guy with the mechanical arm, and he's got the whole crew are great. I don't like how he goes out with the inflatable bullet, unfortunately, but everything other than that is...
That was weak.
Yeah, agreed.
But everything else is great. And then I got to say the worst, though, is Sheriff Pepper, because while I can appreciate Sheriff Pepper for his comedy insights...
What are you... Some kind of doomsday machine, boy. Well, we got a case strong enough to hold an animal like you here. Secret agent? On whose side?
Well, you know, do you know who that really is the forefather of? That is the forefather of...
And that's nothing but pure and simple old-fashioned communism.
That's what that is, the forefather of Sheriff Buford T. Justice. I guarantee you that's where they got the idea for that.
Oh, yeah, it is. And I was at a car repair place the other day, stuck there, and that movie was on. It was surprisingly entertaining. I was like, man, because I hadn't watched that in 20 years.
What, Smokey the Bandit?
Yes.
You didn't watch that movie for 20 years. You know what that is, John?
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And if I hear you say that, I just think...
What the hell is the world coming to?
I am well armed tonight, gang.
He's got toys.
I do. But yeah, the boat chase is absolutely fantastic. I love a good boat chase, and there's probably been what, 4, 5, 6 good boat chases in all the Bond movies so far. And this is really
time out.
Yeah.
Rank the boat chase.
Ooh,
Van Plexico, go.
Oh, I'm gonna have to say Live and Let Die is boat chase number one. The World Is Not Enough. World Is Not Enough is number two. Moonraker's number three. Spy Who Loved. No. The From Russia with Love is number four. What am I missing? Am I missing a good boat chase? I think that's all the big ones.
I think you've nailed it down pretty well by Jared's standards.
So Live and Let Die, World Is Not Enough, Moonraker. And then From Russia with Love. Because From Russia with Love is pretty good. I'll give him credit. I like the ending of the From Russia with Love one where he spills the oil and or get the fuel in the water and then shoots a flare gun into it. That's pretty cool. And I love that it has General Gogol as the Spectre guide, like directing traffic with a bullhorn while all the boats are on fire. That's pretty cool, too. Okay, so that's my good and bad about Live and Let Die. I mean, I agree with you guys, too. I mean, it is a classic. I know it doesn't age well in some ways. Like, for example, Bond's tile in his kitchen in his little apartment is pretty horrific, but pretty heinous. But But overall, I love it. Let's go on to The World Is Not Enough. Speaking of cool boat chases, I think I'll start this one off since I let you guys start the first two. I'm going to talk a little bit about The World Is Not Enough. I really like this movie. I think it's underrated. The main villain actually turns out to be, what's her name, Jared?
Electra King.
Electra King. I knew you'd know. But the ostensible villain, until you realize the big twist, is the Scottish actor, whose name escapes me also. But I love him because while I don't think he was a great character, the whole thing was he can't feel pain, and they turn him into some kind of a Superman just because he can't feel pain. I'm like, I don't know if that makes you Superman. But I love that guy because he goes on to be Dr. Rush in Stargate Universe, which I love. And he's like the evil, kind of evil, bad guy scientist on Stargate Universe. And so I really like his work in a lot of things. But The World Is Not Enough has a great boat chase at the beginning. It's got the hot air balloon thing, right, where he falls off onto the Millennium Dome. The explosion of in MI6 in that building. It's got it has a lot of really good stuff going for it. Although it's got some really. Just like Pierce Brosnan, I get it confused with Tomorrow Never Dies. Yeah, this is the one that's got the helicopter with big saw blades on it, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
So it's got the cool scenes with the Russian guy that's kind of Bond's enemy / ally. I like a good Bond ally. I like a good new Bond ally. And even though they're kind of bickering through most of the movie and have an antagonistic relationship, he ends up more or less being Bond's ally. And I like that. And then you can't talk about this movie, though, without talking about its absolute low point, which is the nuclear scientist, obviously. Now, you know, if I have to have a clearly doesn't know what they're doing Bond girl as a nuclear scientist, at least it's Denise Richards in a tank top, okay? I mean, if I've got to have Denise Richards...
You're a man of principle.
If I've got to have Denise Richards in this movie ruining it, at least it's Denise Richards in a little thin tank top ruining the movie, okay? So it's like, it's poison, but it actually tastes pretty good while you're swallowing it. You know what I'm saying? So...
I have no comments for that.
I'm gonna leave off there and let you two talk about this movie, and we'll kind of come back around. Let's see, Jared, what do you think about The World Is Not Enough?
The World Is Not Enough. I like it okay, but to me, it's one of the more middle of the road.
Yeah.
James Bond films. It's let's see. All right, I'll just go high points.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the opening scene. That boat chase was dope, as the kids say on the streets.
Do they not?
I don't remember where you guys ranked it, but I actually love the theme song, mainly because I kick ass on it in karaoke. So, you know, maybe someday. I like that. I like that song. Some people say it's garbage, but I like it.
Nice.
Anyway. Boat chase theme song.
Well done.
I always like the ones that have just a bit more a character development. We talked about on the last podcast we did, and this one has good character development between him and M, which I thought was cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not big on the villain. Sophie Marceau did a good job, though. She kind of like I think tried to carry Denise Richards through the thing. I like to call this Denise Richards tryout film for a Tomb Raider, because I just felt like that's what she was doing the whole time.
That's a good point.
Other than that, like the Parahawks thing, you know, the snow parachute things was kind of fun.
That's kind of cool. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, everything was just kind of middle of the road to me. I think I've said my piece.
Okay,
John.
I think that's fair. I mean, middle of the road is fair. Like there are parts of it I enjoy, but the Denise Richards thing and the whole pipeline thing, you know, was kind of blah. That didn't do a lot for me. I did like you said, the boat chase at the beginning was good. That was entertaining, but they were in these, in the Black Sea, on the coast of the Black Sea, and the helicopters with the big saws attack the building and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that part was like, okay, it's a little, it's the most inefficient way I could ever think to try to kill somebody.
I thought it was goofy too. I did.
Yeah.
You could like drop a bomb on the building or whatever if you're gonna chop it in little pieces with a saw. But
well,
it's
we,
not.
Well,
it's,
we
it's
paid
not cool
for these
looking.
Things.
Yeah. It's all right. We got to use them. We got to spend $1,000 an hour in helicopter gas or whatever. So. But no, you've hit on the main thing, which is like the Denise, you know, Richards part, just totally, you know, not believable. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you're like, okay, when you know, yes, fine. She's a nuclear scientist. Got it. So. That's the part where the movie just kind of comes off the rails.
It's like if Ursula Andress had come up from the ocean in Dr. No and gone up to Sean Connery and said, I'm a nuclear scientist here to look at the reactor at Dr. No's headquarters. You know, I mean, it's just, no, you're not. Didn't you, though, when they showed that helicopter trimming the trees earlier in the movie, didn't you immediately go, oh, we'll see that again? You don't just
yeah.
The camera doesn't just focus on a helicopter with these really cool saw blades coming out the bottom of it, and then you never see that again, right? I mean, that's like Chekhov's gun hanging on the wall in Act One. You know you're going to shoot it in Act Three. There's just no way you're not. So, you know, so I mean, if they hadn't, we'd all be sitting here saying, "Why did they show that cool helicopter with the saw blades and never use it?" You know,
it's true. That's true.
Yeah. I think this movie had the longest opening in Bond history because it was supposed to start the pre-credit sequence was supposed to end with him getting in the boat and going out the side of the building, but they decided just to go ahead and put the whole boat chase in the pre-credits too. So the pre-credit scene, this movie is like 12, 15 minutes long.
Oh yeah.
You know, it goes from the very, very beginning all the way through the hot air balloon exploding, him falling. So,
yeah, it does have a long one.
Yeah,
it also. I'm sorry to double back, but I just thought of another thing that really kind of turned me off about mm-hmm. it. That the closing line of the movie was just awful.
Yeah, it was. even if Roger Moore had said it, it's still.
The thing about it is, too, I saw the movie. It came out the year I graduated college, 99.
Okay.
So I'm at the right age for that kind of sophomoric sexual innuendo humor. I mean, I still consider myself at the right age for that. But even I was like, oh, come on. That's just I turned to my buddy and I was like, let's get the hell out of here. I'm kind of done with this.
It was a very Roger Moore line, though. That was the one thing for poor Pierce Brosnan was that they did give him – they gave – one of the reasons I love Brosnan, he's a little bit Sean Connery, a little bit Roger Moore. He'd get to do some of the cool Sean Connery stuff, but then every once in a while they would give him something that you know was left over from a Roger Moore script. You know, we never got to do the Christmas Jones, Christmas only comes once a year line. Oh, give it to Pierce. He'll pull it off. And I'm sure Pierce is like, oh, crap. All right, fine. I'll say it, you know. But
you said pull it off.
Yeah.
See, I told you I was at the right age for it.
But yeah, the one thing I do like about the title, though, is they actually managed to find a relevant Bond title. I mean, with, you know, GoldenEye was kind of the last one you thought, because that was the name of Ian Fleming's house in Jamaica. And then with Tomorrow Never Dies, they're just starting to just make up these titles. But The World Is Not Enough, we found out in Honor Majesty's Secret Service, is actually the Bond family's, you know, motto or whatever from their crest. So this one actually has a legitimate title connection to the Bond mythology, which I think is pretty cool. I guess it was the last one, wasn't it, to have, well, other than Casino Royale. I think so.
Quantum of Solace is a short story title.
Yeah, that's right. They don't ever mention Skyfall anywhere, do they? I don't think so.
Did I know?
I think they made that up for the movie. Okay, one left to go. So back around to you, Jared. License to Kill. Ooh.
Oh, I feel honored to get this one. I feel like, and I mentioned this on Twitter, and then Van tried to Twitter fight me, and it was a whole thing. But I feel like License to Kill might be the most underrated James Bond movie. I will come out and say I adore License to Kill, and now I'll tell you why. so much to fill in. I'm going to boil it down to, first of all, return of David Hedison.
Yes, that's fair.
Second of all, this is a straight up, no BS, you have pissed off James Bond revenge movie, and damn if that's not awesome. I just feel like that's all I needed. They cast the hook, and I was like, oh, is that a Bond revenge movie? And then I swallowed the whole thing, and I loved every minute. It's like, I think it's Benicio del Toro's first feature film.
Mm-hmm.
I love Fran Sanchez as a villain. Like I always earmarked him as one of my favorite villains because he was, everyone else was so evil just to be evil, but he was the kind of guy, which they say several times in the movie, where if you're loyal to him, he will reward you and take care of you. And I always thought, well, that was a unique take. So you got a unique take villain. You got Benicio del Toro breakout performance. You got Bond just off the leash. And I just, like I said, I love the ones that are more emotional or more deeper. So we got to see a completely emotional Bond. It's not for Queen. It's not for country. It's because you screwed him over. And I love that movie. And oh yeah. And the semi-truck things chasing was badass.
John, License to Ill.
I think Jared made a good point. It is the most, it is a lot of ways, it's the most violent James Bond movie.
Yes, it is.
Because it's very much, I mean, there's a lot of Bond movies where he's doing a lot of kind of sneaking around and he kills one or two guys. Mm-hmm. But this is a movie, you're right, where it really is like, it's much more personal. It's not a, you know, I'm trying to find some decoder that sank in the Aegean Sea or whatever kind of thing, where it's very political.
John, don't give away the plot to our upcoming Bond novel, John. Come on.
All right, sorry. you messed with my friends, and now I'm coming for you. And so it is a much more personal movie in that sense, and it is more violent by far than a lot of Bond movies, and I think they do well with it. And maybe it's trying to fit in again with the times, the movies that were coming out at the time. Like we talked about, it were a lot of violent big screen movies at that point. And then, you know, the whole Bond versus the drug dealer thing made sense at the time too, with what was going on in the world. But so I think it's solid, but it's not my favorite. So how about that?
Okay. Well, I've said all along that there's a couple of it's one that I don't show to Mira when we rewatch the series every year because it's so violent and there's not a lot of redeeming, you know, goofiness and cuteness about it. My problem always has been with it, though, that if you compare it to the next one after it, GoldenEye, it just looks so much its period. It looks like the – relative to how much money they spent on it, I mean, you know, relative to the amount of, relative to inflation or whatever, to me it looks like the cheapest Bond movie of all 24. I mean, if you go back and look at the Connery ones that cost $1 million, like Dr. No, to me it's still, there. It just looks like all $1 million is on the screen, whereas to me, when I look at this one, it just seems like a made-for-TV 1980s, it would have been on NBC movie, and the cast doesn't help that because Robert Davi and I believe Anthony Zerbe, these were guys that had been doing villains on like TV shows on like, you know, Columbo type shows for years, and suddenly they're Bond villains. So it looked to me, just as to me, it looks cheap, and the cast looks cheap. It doesn't have the glamour factor of a Connery or even a Roger Moore. And then when Brosnan comes in, it looks like they throw a whole lot more money up on the screen and make them really slick again. So this, to me, was really the low point of the Bond series overall, and I just don't like it much at all. I don't like the Bond girls. I don't like the villain. I don't like that it's so violent, and I really, really don't like Timothy Dalton as Bond. So I just don't like this movie much at all. So there you go. Well,
here's the thing.
I knew you had to say something.
I got to say something.
All right.
I was going to give you and your family the Disney Channel for free, and now you can forget it.
Dang it. I blew it. Dang it. All right, gentlemen, let's rank them. I'm ready to go to do this. So we'll start with Thunderball. Jared, 3-2-1-0, Thunderball.
No, I want to be clear. 3 is the best and 0 is the worst.
That is correct.
Not playing golf.
No.
We're playing soccer.
There you go.
Thunderball, I gave it and didn't come easily, but I gave it a 1.
Wow. Holy jeez.
Yeah.
A 1.
Put that in your bracket and smoke it.
It is. Wow. John, Thunderball already on the ropes and looking at possible elimination. I'm bonds.
I need my mic over here while I call.
I know. I'm shocked. Okay. I guess if you look at the whole bracket, I see why Jared gave it a 1, but still, it blows my mind. What have you got, John?
2.
I'm going to give this one a 3. All right. I think that may be enough to get it through. I think that'll probably be enough to get it second in the group. John, Live and Let Die.
Can we do some of the other ones first and come back to this one?
You want to? All right. Jared, The World Is Not Enough.
Can we do some of the other ones? No, I'm just kidding.
Do License to Kill first.
Do License to Kill?
Yeah,
right.
Do License to Kill. Let's get it off the map.
John, License to Kill. I'm trying to find somebody willing to rate one of these movies. John,
3.
Are you serious? Are you seriously giving License to Kill a 3? I'm lost.
It sounds like a yes to me.
I'm lost. I have no idea what's going on now.
No, I'm not. I'm sorry. I can't do it. No.
All right.
No.
License to Kill.
All right. Truth be told, I contacted John before we did this.
Oh.
And told John to give it a 3 just to hear what you would say in reaction to that.
I'm just flabbergasted is all.
I wanted your head to just be racing for a minute. Like, what the absolute hell is going on?
I said I'm lost. I'm totally lost. I don't know. Yeah.
All right. That was my fault.
Well played,
to me, so we can go back to Live and Let Die if you
all
want.
Right.
Yeah, go back to Live and Let Die.
All right. Well played. Nice attempt.
Live and Let Die is my 3.
Live and Let Die gets a 3.
Ooh.
All right, Jared, Live and Let Die.
Number 2.
2, all right. I'm going to have to give Live and Let Die a 2 as well. I think it's going to win the group. Let's see. I'm going to give The World Is Not Enough my 1. Jared, The World Is Not Enough.
Unfortunately, I have to give The World Is Not Enough my goose egg. I don't hate it. It's just how it fell out for this bracket.
I hear you. That's how it goes. John, World Is Not Enough.
I wish I could give both these last two like 0.5. Because I mean,
yeah, you got to pick one.
If I got to pick one, I got to this one. I got to give this one the 0.
All right, and so I guess that means that License to Kill. What does it get from you, Jared? I can't even. Let's see. You still
big
have
3.
3.
Big 3, and it's not okay. A joke, not a setup. It's not a 3.
Not a make believe story. Not a whatever. Okay, so John, you give it a 1?
1.
And I give it a 0. All right, so this bracket ends up, Live and Let Die wins at 7. Thunderball finishes second at 6. License to Kill is a pretty strong third at 4. And The World Is Not Enough finishes last with a 1. Wow. Okay. We'll see if that's enough to get License to Kill through as a wild card. It could. It very well could.
I'm taking it all the way to the championship, one way or another.
It's certainly not going to be challenged by Quantum of Solace. So, yeah. All right. Let's get on into Group F here. Before we do, I have to we have to pause, but I want to first thank our patrons. This show, of course, goes out as a free podcast on the White Rocket Entertainment Network, but we are doing some that are only going to the patrons initially, at least for the first couple of months. We've done, John and I have been doing Lord of the Rings. We did Fellowship of the Ring. We just recently posted The Two Towers. I'm posting videos and so forth. There's artwork. All kind of stuff is out there. If you join our Patreon page for White Rocket, it's at Patreon, patreon.com/VanAllenPlexico, or just go to patreon.com and search for me, and you'll find what is essentially the White Rocket page where you can help support our shows, and you can get lots of cool rewards and early sneak previews and stuff like that, and access to all of our shows immediately. And I want to thank our patrons so far, Nicholas Cottrell, of course, our platinum level sponsor, as well as David Medinas, Mark Squire, Dave Powell, Michael Kirshner, Bill Matthews, and Joey Miller. You guys are kicking butt. We appreciate what you're doing here and over on the AU Wishbone. So let me take just a second here for a message from one of our other shows, and we'll come right back. The Avengers Assemble podcast from White Rocket Entertainment. Creator and fan interviews and discussion about Marvel's Avengers comics, movies, and everything else. From Van Allen Plexico and the Jarvis Heads of AvengersAssemble.net, creators of the best-selling Assembled books and the most fanatical Avengers fans on the face of the earth. All right, so let's get our last group in here and wrap things up so we all can get back to our families and not be sleeping in the doghouse tonight. This is Group F. It's the bottom group, but it's the other number one seed group, so I want to go ahead and get it in tonight. Let's see. We've got number one is Goldfinger. Number six seed is Skyfall. Number nine seed is The Man with the Golden Gun. Number 12 seed is Octopussy. So, Jared, why don't you lead us off talking about Goldfinger?
All right. I'm happy to. Goldfinger is... There, you can keep going. I'll wait. Nope. That's it. All right.
That's it. That's all I got.
Goldfinger, a special place in my heart. It's my favorite James Bond movie. I'll go ahead and tell you that. It's everything that we love about James Bond. It's Connery. It's the first time the full formula came together with a opening scene, an amazingly powerful theme song. Yeah. Cool gadgets. The DB5 was awesome. The girl painted in gold. All right, Goldfinger, Odd Job, Fort Knox. Goodness gracious. I don't have a bad thing to say about this movie. It's all good stuff on my end. It sings to me. You know, I call myself the yard sale artist, and I started going to flea markets and yard sales when I was 5 years old. And the first dollar I can remember spending at a yard sale at 5 years old was to buy the soundtrack record, because that's, you know, when I was five. So that's the first record I ever bought, and Jared's life was off on its own road from that moment forward. Goldfinger, who's got questions?
John, tell us what you think about Goldfinger.
I second a lot of what Jared said. I really enjoy this. And as we talked about, Van, as you and I talked about when we did the podcast about the Bond movies, I love that an important, you know, face-off between Bond and the villain involves cheating at golf.
Yeah.
And yeah. He switches yes. the balls and then accuses him of cheating. Like, this guy's trying to destroy the world, basically. And you're trying to get under his skin by accusing him of cheating at golf. And I love, Odd Job throwing his hat, chopping off the top of the statue. I just, that whole thing makes me happy. And at the time, you know, the idea of the whole gold at Fort Knox thing and that being a central point, I really like that. I think it's a really, really good movie.
I think this may be overall my least favorite group. I like a lot about Goldfinger. The stuff, let me put it this way, the stuff that I like about Goldfinger, I love, right? I mean, it's got, but for almost everything in it that I love, there's something about it I don't really like. Like, I love that it's got the Aston Martin, but I don't like that he crashes it into the side of a building instead of, like, doing something cool with it. I like that.
Yeah, it's tough to watch James Bond lose a game of chicken with himself.
Yeah. I will give you. It's true. Yeah, it's a mirror, right?
Yes.
I like that, you know, that it's got, what's her name, is Pussy Galore, but I don't like that he basically, like, all but rapes her and converts her from being a lesbian with his Bond magnetism, which is kind of annoying. I like that he gets the bad guys.
He gave hope to all of us.
I like that he gets the bad guys all in his lair to explain his evil plan. I don't like that he then kills them all, so what was the point?
Yes, I mean, that's the biggest flaw in that whole movie.
Yes.
I
with the big elaborate model.
Yeah, and then it's for nothing.
Flips over from a pool table.
Well, you know what that is it's like you've got Ken Adam on salary, you know? Design us a super cool map room with a control center and everything. I mean, I'm sure you've probably seen this, Jared. Have you ever seen this, John? You know, in Moonraker, do you remember how in Moonraker they're underneath the shuttle? And yes. And it turns from like a control center into an empty room that's going to get filled with fire. Mm-hmm. That's another Ken Adam design, and they deleted the scene where they actually used that room for something. So you're like, why did it have tables and chairs and telephones in it? Because they just took the scene out. It's crazy. So I just love those Ken Adam designs. They're fantastic. So yeah, I mean, the thing with Goldfinger is it's got so much good. In fact, I think that the girl that gets painted gold is one of my favorite Bond girls in the whole series. I just love her. I wish Jill Masterson, I wish she'd been in more of the movie before that happened.
Yes.
But and I love him cheating playing cards at the beginning, and Bond gets on the radio and tells him to start losing and everything. I mean, that's while he's making out with his girlfriend in his hotel room. In Miami. I mean, and we get Sean Connery in the blue terry cloth onesie.
Yes. How did I forget to mention that?
Who on God's green earth thought that was a good look for Sean Connery? But here's the thing.
I've tried it.
Here's the thing, though. He's Sean Connery. So
1964, okay?
Yeah. But he's Sean Connery. He pulls it off. I'm looking at him in that going.
I think she does actually.
Well, yeah, right. But I'm looking at Sean Connery in that. And I'm going. He's wearing a blue terry cloth onesie, but he does. He looks pretty. You know, he looks studly.
I think you can take me in a fight.
I give him credit. He looks cooler in a blue onesie than I look in like a suit and tie. I mean, heck, it's Sean Connery. Dang. So yeah. I mean, it gives with one hand, it takes with the other. I like a lot about it, and I'm irked by a lot about it. And he spends a lot of time being held captive in this movie too, which kind of annoys me. Rather than doing cool Bondsy stuff like in Thunderball. So
that group is over, Van.
I know it is indeed. So anyway, I have issues with it, but it's not bad. So. All right, let's see. John, what do you think about the 50th anniversary movie, the biggest box office success ever, at least in modern money, no, not adjusted for inflation? I think Thunderball might still be number one for, not to revisit that topic again, but I think it might still be number one adjusted for inflation. But what do you think about Skyfall?
I like that Skyfall is the continuation of the story.
Yeah.
You know, that they, I really liked the villain. You know, I thought he was really good. I thought he was creepy.
Yeah.
You know, I like the transition to the new M that they kind of start here, with Ralph Fiennes. I really like the abandoned Chinese city thing they go to. I think that part's cool. Mm. And the scene where he fights the sniper guy kind of in the room with the neon flashing on and off. and you know, there's some good stuff at the end where they have the big fight at the house, and he talks about them going back in time, and they have the old groundskeeper and stuff with the one shotgun and that kind of stuff. And they're fighting the bad guys. But it was a little overdone, parts of it, and I love the villain, but he was a little much at times, like the part where he's hitting on Bond.
yeah, that was unusual.
It was didn't see that part coming.
Mm.
And then also like the you know, the scene where they where he makes Bond shoot at the girl basically while she's tied up. But and then he, you know, the whole like, was he in love with M? Was it like a mother thing, you know? But that was a little, it was a little weird. But I mean, he, his as a character, I thought he was, you know, really compelling. And I thought the end part was fun. Kind of a, it's not a position we see Bond in a lot. Like, he has time to prepare, but he doesn't have all the modern gadgets, and the bad guys are coming. You know, so it's more about his skill or whatever than getting out of there because he's got, you know, 50 gadgets, or he could press a button and the good guys are coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jared, what do you think about Skyfall?
I'm a big fan. I really like Skyfall. It's actually my favorite Daniel Craig movie. I think, although, you know, John makes some great points, there are some parts about it that, that kind of make you, leave me kind of scratch my head, like, okay, what? You know, like, if you remember correctly, you know, Bond kind of loses his edge, right? And then he's got to come back and take all these tests, and then he actually doesn't pass the tests, and M's like, but puts him back in the field. And I'm like, that's a very un-M-like thing to do. I guess they were, you know, trying to make a character development thing, but it just felt weird. Like, could you imagine Bernard Lee doing that? Like, I just couldn't, you know, it's like, no, he didn't pass the test. He doesn't go in the field, you know, period. But that's a nitpick, obviously. My other favorite nitpick is got to be the new Q, the new quartermaster, who's like, oh, you know, he's like, we don't go in for an exploding pen. You know, here's your airline tickets and your pistol. You know, so like, okay, so basically Bond's like, so you're my secretary then? Oh, no, no, I'm an armorer. Yeah, but you haven't made anything. You bought me tickets and delivered my gun. Yeah, you're my secretary. You're a secretary. So
Well, but and the other part is the entire movie hinges on the plot that this guy's supposed to be a computer genius, but yet he plugs the other, the bad guy's laptop into their network.
Yep. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Nobody would ever do that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they just did not find their footing with that character very well. I didn't think. Although it does give a nice setup for the scene where he's, you know, it's a new thing called radio, you know, which is a funny joke.
So yeah,
there is a small payoff there. But yeah, I think the action is a lot of fun. Like John pointed out, the whole silhouette fight was cool because it was very stylistic, and they did it in such a way that, unlike Quantum of Solace, even though it's a silhouette fight, I was still fairly clear on who was who.
Yeah.
So that's not an easy thing to pull off. So yeah, I think Skyfall, I think it's the James Bond movie I've seen the most times in the theater. I think I saw it in the theater 5 times.
Well, that's where they got all that $1 billion from.
Yeah, it was me basically, and I won't go so far as to say as I saw it 5 times. Oh, so good! Like I saw it twice because I really liked it, and then I had a friend who didn't see it, so I took him, and then I had another friend who didn't see it, so I took him, so on and so forth. But I had, like, every time I was happy to go. So no big drawbacks. We've already established I like the ones that are slightly have more of an emotional base to them, and this one showed, you know, Bond's relationship with M some more. Silva was a great villain. Unfortunately, we'd seen the 00 villain before in GoldenEye, sort of like the guy who can match him.
Right.
But Silva had enough style to make it differently. And the scene where he kind of hits on Bond sexually actually didn't bother me that much. I thought, at first I thought it was weird, but then I thought, you know what? You know, in the course of all the things that 007 has had to do for England and for his country, you know, having to do some, you know, homosexual stuff, it's probably happened before. He's probably had to do that. So I went, you know what? That fits, and I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, to me, to understand this movie, you have to understand the way that the British approach milestones, because this movie came out the year before the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who. And I didn't really understand that when the Bond movie was out. But when Doctor Who's 50th anniversary came around the very next year, I was like, oh, I understand Skyfall better now. Because they made such a big production out of it being the 50th anniversary and having to go back and revisit a lot of his old foes and bring in like the actors from in the previous years and everything and just make a gala out of it, a gala out of it, you know, that I said, you know, that's kind of what Mendez was trying to do with Skyfall. It was a 50th anniversary Bond movie. They wanted Sean Connery to play the groundskeeper at the end instead of, I forget his name, that ended up playing the old man with the beard. That was supposed to be Sean Connery, but Connery wouldn't do it because he's Connery. That would have made so much sense, though, right? So much of what Mendez did in Skyfall was homages to previous Bond movies. And in Spectre, he did it even worse, which is why it's one of the two things about Spectre that make me furious, is that all Mendez wanted to do was just remake every other Bond movie in pieces and glue them all together and call it a new Bond movie. So there was just too much homage for me. It was too much the, hey, it's the 50th anniversary. I didn't like how in the first two Craig movies, he's just starting out. He's just gotten his 007 ranking. And then in Skyfall, oh, you're too old. You're too broken down. You know, it's been, you know, three or whatever whole years since you last had a movie. So clearly you're too worn down and beaten up to be Bond anymore. I'm like, what the heck? Is he old or young? I mean, but then at the very end of it, we get the very beginning of like Dr. No, where they're in back in the underground bunker complex. You know, they're not in the, what do you call it? The Vauxhall Cross. Yeah, they're not in Vauxhall Cross anymore. They're underground. You've got M again as a man. You've got Moneypenny again, you know. So Skyfall in some ways is about the end of Bond's career, and in some ways it's about the beginning. And it was kind of an odd juxtaposition of those two, I thought. So, and I don't really like the villain. I understand what you guys are saying about him. I agree he was quirky and he stood out and he was different, and that's good. But not in a way that really made me particularly excited about him. I just never was very fond of him. And just not much about that movie do I really enjoy. So not really one of my favorites. I always called it Skyfail. So there you go. Yeah, let's see.
Such rancor.
Well, that's what we're here for. It'd be boring if we all agreed about everything. John, kick us off with the man with the golden gun.
Well, there's a man and he has a golden gun.
Thank goodness
John
you're here.
John is correct.
So glad
we're deep with this one.
Yes. Who is that man?
So it's a movie. It's a 1970s movie that revolves around a plot about solar power, basically.
The Jimmy Carter administration presents The Man with a Golden Gun.
But so The Man with the Golden Gun is an assassin, Francisco Scaramanga,
yes,
who lives on a little island with a tattoo, which is not tattoo.
Might as well be.
And, you know, he goes around and kills people, and then Bond goes to his headquarters and eventually to his little island. And Christopher Lee is really good as the villain.
Yes.
And they have a little shootout but the little pop-up thing is not my favorite thing. But it is a really fun Bond movie. I mean, I do enjoy a lot of it. It's a very 1970s kind of thing. So, you know, they go to Asia. There's, you know, that's where his island is. And there's some kung fu fighting and that kind of stuff in the movie. But I think it's really about Christopher Lee as the bad guy and Tattoo, who's his sidekick,
mm-hmm.
and Bond going to his headquarters and basically having a shootout with, you know, basically one of the other most dangerous assassin in the world, and Bond winning.
Yeah. Jared, talk about it.
Talk about it. Man with the Golden Gun, much like, Live and Let Die. This is another one where you can kind of see what else was popular in movies at the time. And, you know, Bruce Lee was big and kung fu movies were big. So they were like, okay, let's do some kung fu stuff. Obviously, the high point, Christopher Lee, he's amazing. almost underused in the film. We get our first Maude Adams, and mm-hmm. she was excellent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was never big on as someone smarter than me once put it, Arcade's Murder World in yes. the end of GoldenEye or GoldenEye, right. Samantha Golden Gun. Yeah, it was just kind of something was odd about it. It was very almost psychedelic 70s stuff. The Lulu song is kind of a lot of fun. Another one I'm pretty good at, but anyway. I love the actual stunt, the spiral car loop, you know, jump spins, corkscrew, mm-hmm. you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That stunt was really cool. Of course, they had to put a sound effect in it.
Oh, it's a Rocky Horror movie. The sound effect.
That's the long.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. Did we lose Jared? I think we lost Jared.
Hello, you got me?
Yeah, you're back.
Okay. Yeah, so he has the Return of Sheriff J.W. Pepper, which I know Van's not big on.
Oh, Lord.
And, yeah, again, we talked about this on our last episode with Roger Moore, kind of got all the goofy stuff possible. Like, all the writers were just like, let's go goofy. So it is goofier, yes. The only real burning question that I have about The Man with the Golden Gun is if you look at Scaramanga's his ship. I was going to say his junk, but I didn't want you guys to start giggling. All right. If you look at Scaramanga's junk, get it out of your system, boys.
That was well done. Well done. Well played.
If you look at it, especially I was noticing this at the end when Bond steals it.
You turned to stone?
He's taking Goodnight away. There's like a massive amount of coconuts on that boat. And I'm like, is he like killing people for $1 million and also selling coconuts? What is the deal with the coconuts? And until I have those answers, I'm always going to wonder what he gets $1 million per contract. But he's like, oh, but on the side, I sell coconuts 3 for $1. I don't get it.
The coconuts are a cover.
Oh. Well, I'm envisioning that like somebody comes to that island, like some billionaire guy like Largo in his boat comes up to the island, and Christopher Lee comes out there with his golden gun. He's like, "Yes, who are you paying me to kill?" And Largo goes, "No, I just need 6 coconuts."
No, man, I'm here for the coconuts. I heard you were the guy at sea.
Yeah. The best coconuts.
Yes, right.
Christopher Lee's like, just come look at my junk. The story unfolds.
That's how he got Anders and Miss Anders in the first place. He says, would you like to come back to my island and look at my junk? This show's gone off the rails. This
I love
is not
this show.
Good.
I love this podcast.
We've just gone off the rails tonight. All right. Well, let me talk about The Man with the Golden Gun for just a second. To me, it's got it's got some stuff that I'm not happy about. I don't like Sheriff Pepper in Louisiana. I can buy Sheriff Pepper in Thailand. I'm just like, no.
Yes.
But he plays such a great American tourist. He's
he
like
does.
So American.
I have to, yes. Well, if he hadn't been in Live and Let Die, if he'd just been some crazy American sheriff that happened to be in Thailand, I could buy it. But he can't be in both. He can be in one or the other, but not both, okay? Not both. It's got one of my favorite Roger Moore lines ever in it, though. And this is all about Goodnight, because we haven't talked about Goodnight. Not Urs Landress, but Britt Eklund, right, is Goodnight. And I love that she goes and hides in the closet all night while he's making out and doing stuff with Ms. Anders. And when she comes out, she's all mad. And Roger Moore basically pats her on the head and says, "Buck up, Goodnight. Your time will come." Awesome.
There'll be junk rides for everyone eventually.
That is the best thing ever. It's like, your time will come. You'll get your chance. You'll get your turn. Oh, my gosh. That is the best 1970s line of all time. This was
I
a back...
more to give, baby doll.
John and I have talked before about how this movie is basically a backdoor pilot for Fantasy Island. And it is, because Christopher Lee's character becomes Mr. Rourke, and he looks a lot like him, you know. And he's, you know, Mr. Rourke is like the Latin Christopher Lee, basically. And you got Hervé Villechaize back. You do have this cool flying car, which is like the most, it's like an old Ford that pops out wings and flies around, and Goodnight's in the trunk, which is pretty funny. So you see in Scaramanga's trunk full of junk as well as his junk.
And his junk and his trunk.
And his trunk, that's right. But lastly, I'll just wrap this one mercifully up by saying, the thing that makes me crazy about this movie is that Christopher Lee is so great, and I wish he could have had a great Bond movie to be in, because he's such a great villain. And instead, this one ends up looking like, to me, the second cheapest. I mean, we talked about License to Kill. To me, the problem with the way that The Man with the Golden Gun is it looks like it was shot with a TV camera. There's no color saturation anywhere. The whole movie is just very washed out. The whole movie, it just seems to be in shades of white and tan and gray and pale. There's no vivid, there's nothing that's really eye-catching in this movie. And it should have been really vivid and eye-catching. So, but I do love James Bond Island. That's like the one location in all the Bond movies you can still go to, and it's just like it was in the movie. They've kept it the same. You can take a tour out there, because some of the other podcasts, those guys have been out there several times. So that's pretty cool. So, all right. So last one. Let's see. Whose turn is it to go first? Jared, you kick us off on Octopussy. The Return of Maude Adams.
All right. Yes, The Return of Maude Adams. Octopussy is, I like it. I think it's a middle of the road Bond. I enjoy it. I think it probably has a soft spot in my heart, because that's the first one I saw in the theater as a kid. And I distinctly remember the theater going experience. So it's, you know, it's special to me, but I also see it, for its flaws. But, starting with, the good, Roger Moore's a lot of fun in it. That's for sure. And there's nice exotic locale. They get a lot of mileage out of India. I feel like we got to see a lot of it in streets and countryside and the island. And I just thought it looked good. Maude Adams, she did fine. What's that guy's name? Louis Jordan.
Oh yeah.
As Kamal Khan. Mm-hmm. It was very cool. Cool bad guy. The whole clowns and circus thing, Mishka and Grishka. I mean, it's just, I guess what I'm getting at is it's very visual. That's where I'm going with this. Yeah. It's very visual and colorful with India and the circus. And it's a lot of fun to watch. The opening scene with the little acro jet is just still very cool to me. You got to remember, I'm watching this when I'm like six or so. Mm. And I'm just like, what? You know, and now when I'm 40, I'm like, what? Because I didn't mature much. But anyway, I think it's got a great opening scene. Like I said, it's very colorful and fun. But as I've told you guys a million times before, I like the ones that put a little more on the table emotionally. And this one puts almost nothing on the table emotionally for James. We do get a little bit of his history about the favor that he did for Octopussy's father.
Mm.
We get a little glimpse into his past, but that's about it. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on Octopussy.
Okay. John, Octopussy.
As you and I have discussed, Roger Moore acting like a clown is bad for James Bond.
Bad.
Dressing up like a clown and being a clown.
No.
And doing the silly stuff he does in this movie is not good for James Bond.
No.
I mean, it's kind of the opposite end of the spectrum from which movie we were talking about earlier that was like the revenge movie.
Yeah.
That was like nakedly like James Bond, like on a cold-blooded killing rampage. This is like James Bond and clown, like la 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 la, you know. And yes. And so that to me is the part where just it takes, you know, that to kind of makes it hard to watch again and hard to enjoy. As a Bond movie.
Exactly. Here's the thing. Every time somebody that likes this movie goes through the things they like about it, I think, oh yeah, that's true. Oh, that's true, too. Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. Oh, I do like the little jet. I do like Louis Jordan. I like his Sikh henchman. He's a really good henchman. Out there? I love that guy. I love the backgammon scene. I love the elephant chase through the jungle, although it's got the... Every Roger Moore movie, they got to do something to ruin it. But, you know, everybody complains about that kind of stuff in Moonraker and not the others, so just to tick me off. So I'll be the first to admit, there is a lot about Octopussy that's really cool. There's also Vijay Armitage with a tennis racket fighting bad guys, but we'll set that aside because it is India. But, yeah, then at the end, you get Bond afraid of a knife-throwing flunky, which he should never be afraid of, and you get him in clown makeup begging a general to pay attention to him, and everybody's laughing at him, which nobody should ever laugh at James Bond. That's just a no-no. That ending, to me, just ruins the whole movie. It just sets Bond back 20 years and ruins the whole movie. So it could have been one of the better... more interesting Roger Moore's. And I'll give it this. You're exactly right, Jared. It's way more colorful than The Man with the Golden Gun. It's the exact opposite of what I was saying. It's like they found the camera. They used the wrong... It's like they found a better quality of film sometime between 1975 and 1983. Yeah. But, yeah. So it's got some cool things, but overall it really just... they ruin it. So... all right. Any last thoughts on this one or this group before we put our numbers on them? Any rebuttals or complaints? Or...
nope.
All right.
No. I think we did a good job on it. Even Van didn't suck on this.
Wow, that's amazing. That's incredible.
We got two Roger Moore films in this group to pit against each other. So
that's true.
Let's see which Moore comes out on top.
I have a feeling that I know who's going to win this one, but we'll see. Jared Goldfinger, are you going to give it a 3? Right, it's your favorite Bond.
Yeah, no doubt. That's automatic. A-U-T-O-matic, as Prince would say.
And A-U as in Ulrich Goldfinger. John,
yes.
Very good. John Goldfinger.
3.
And given the quality of this group top to bottom, I have to give that one a 3, too. Boom.
See, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm not sure I would give it a 3 in other groups. It's relative. In this group, it's a 3.
Well, all but the worst of the movies will be moving on to the elimination round, and at that point, it's open season, so we'll see. Skyfall, John.
2 for me.
2. Jared, Skyfall.
This is starting to become like the last bracket of the last episode. 2 for me.
2. I'm gonna give Skyfall a 1.
Dun, dun, dun.
Jared, the man with the golden gun.
Well, now I feel bad because I did one bracket in character of Connery last time, so I'll try to finish this bracket out in character.
You can do Roger Moore.
This time I'm going to do Max Zorin. It's my best walk-in. The man with the golden gun, I like it, but in this group... I gotta give it a 0.
John, the man with the golden gun.
And I want to hear you walking.
I cannot do Christopher Walken. I'm giving it
neither
a
can
one.
I, but I'm doing it.
You gave it a what, John?
1.
It's got the 1. All right.
Oh, we got the 1.
I'm giving the man with the golden gun a 2.
Woo!
But again, like we were just saying, in a different group, it could have gotten a 0 even. So you're
giving Christopher Lee a 2.
I'm giving Christopher Lee 2. Everything else is 0s. There's your 2 in that movie.
Dracula is always good for 2 points.
I love him so much. Saruman, you will taste man flesh on my junk.
I knew it was coming.
The sooner we get off of this group, the better. John wants to disassociate himself from this entire episode. It was an impersonator. He was off doing something somewhere else. John, give us Octopussy rating. 3, 2, 1, or 0?
It's got to be 0. I've used my other numbers.
All right. Jared, Octopussy.
Please, call me Max. I'm giving Octopussy a 1.
Who is that? Get her away! Get him away from her. Remember that? Get him away from her. That's what he said to Mayday about when Bond was macking on Charlie's Angel Girl. I'm giving Octopussy a big 0, and like John said, I wish I had a negative I could give. All right, so this group ends up, Goldfinger gets 9, which may be our first, let's see, it may be our first 9. It is, yeah.
No, I thought you only lived twice.
No, you're right, you only lived twice. Yeah, that's not bad. Goldfinger gets 9, Skyfall gets 5, Golden Gun gets 3, and Octopussy gets 1. I think we found the bracket where there's not going to be a wild card coming out of it. I think this is the bracket that gets eliminated.
Octopussy tanked it, huh?
It really did. 1 point.
Wow. Like I said, though, I'm so weird on it. It's such a soft spot for me, so yeah. I get it.
Well, the next time that we convene, we will do the last two groups, and then we will know who our 16 Bond movies going forward in the single elimination brackets will be. And I have a formula to slot the brackets. So there's a formula. It won't be me. It won't be subjective. It'll be objective slotting. Here's what you can expect on our third episode when we finish out the opening round. We will do Group B from Russia with Love, The Spy Who Loved Me, Spectre, and Die Another Day. And we'll do Group E, Casino Royale, For Your Eyes Only, The Living Daylights, and Diamonds Are Forever. There's some fun movies in all three of these episodes. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to getting to do Group B and Group E. Then we'll have another episode where we'll do basically the round of 16. And maybe we'll go ahead. Yeah, and then we'll probably do one episode where we do the round of 8, the final 4, and the 2, because that'll take up, that'd just be a few movies, so... All right, guys, any last thoughts for James Bond for On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast before we sign off for tonight?
Watch out for blimps.
We're still watching out for blimps. People need to go back and listen to our last episode to figure out if we're a view to a kill.
We gotta stick with that. I mean, those blimps will get you.
Here's a scary thought. A view to a kill ended up getting more points than Octopussy did.
I noticed that. I was like, that, I mean, even as an A View to a Kill kind of guy, I still, yeah, that baffles me a little. But, hey, that's how tournaments go.
Octopussy.
Seeding.
Yeah, Octopussy and Tomorrow Never Dies, which I think is an absolute travesty, are next to last. But Quantum of Solace continues to be our only 0-0-0. All right.
Sad face. I gave it a sad face.
Yeah, 0-0 sad face. All right. Well, Bond, On Her Majesty's Reserve is going to get out of here for another episode. And we will see you guys in 2 or 3 weeks when we get another chance to do our last group show. So, John, Jared, thanks once again for coming on board. And we will see you guys at our next MI6 mission briefing. Thanks a bunch.
Have a good one.
Right. See ya.
Yeah.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.